The question was asked, how would we view a situation where a person uses improper means to attain a proper goal? Namely, a person uses a pagan religion in order to better themselves, to become a better person, to get themselves off of drugs or alcohol or whatever it might be, to stop beating their wife. So they use a tool which is improper to attain a proper goal. So instead of addressing your question directly, I want to tell you a story. A number of years ago, this goes back, I think over a decade ago, somewhere around a decade ago. It's longer, it's about 14 years ago. The following story hit the news here in Israel. There was a woman who started walking around yelling and making all kinds of weird noises and saying that a demon had entered her. And they called in someone who they said was a rabbi. And the person had a reputation of being a rabbi. And the person said all kinds of things and interviewed this demon that was within the woman. And at one point, the demon that was within the woman said, my son is doing drugs, and if you go to his room under this and this tile, you'll find a bunch of drugs. And a few people who were there ran to the room, and they took out the tile, and they found a stash of drugs there. And the police came and took the kid away. And the demon spoke in a very funny voice, and they had the woman lie down on a bed. And then after talking to the demon, they asked him what he wanted, and this demon said that he came back for a specific purpose, and they told him they would take care of that purpose. And once they promised him that, they told him that he has to exit through her pinky. And she started yelling, oh, it hurts, it hurts, it hurts, my pinky, and she's yelling. And then her voice came back to herself, and she was cured. Okay. How do we know this? Because when the story started evolving, a television crew came. And they videotaped all this. Now, what happened the next day? This person became very famous. He must be a great Kabbalist if he was able to get the demon to listen to him. So a lot of people got very excited. And not only did they get very excited, people started doing tshuva. Yet all across the country, they were selling this videotape. They were showing it to kids in schools. You can verify this. This is facts. They sent it to the U.S. In a second, you'll hear the continuation of the story. They sent copies of the videotape to the U.S., and you can imagine that this person got many, many donations from a lot of people who now were great fans of his and was able to build a great institution with those donations. And I was a student. I wasn't yet teaching anywhere. I don't even remember if I had my smicha yet. And I said, the guy's a liar. The guy's a fake. The guy's a thief. And people said to me, how could you talk that way? The guy's a Kabbalist. And I said, it's a lie. There's nothing doing. I don't care what you think you saw. It's a lie. And people said to me, even if you think it's a lie, but good things came of it. People did tshuva. A lot of people who never kept Shabbos are keeping Shabbos now. How could you speak badly about it? I said, no, this isn't holy, this isn't pure, this isn't true. And you don't use lies to get people to do correct things. When a guy's a liar, he's a liar. And this is a lie. So, my friends were divided. There were those who said, they're never going to talk to me again. There were those who said, I'm an apostate, and how could I talk against someone so big? Who do I think I am? So some of my friends, and some of them were old enough to be my parents, some of my friends in yeshiva said they're not talking to me again until I rescind on what I said. Other friends said, they'll talk to me, but not about this, because I'm for sure wrong. Okay. So the topic died. I wasn't interested in talking to anyone about it to begin with, because it got me very upset that a guy's going on public television and publicizing something, which to my mind was clearly a lie. So you'll ask me, how did I know it was a lie? The Rashi in Krisus quotes, and Rashi quotes in Sanhedrin, there is a story that there once was, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was en route to the emperor, and when he was on the boat, a demon showed up on the mast, And they asked him, "What'd you come for?" And he said, "I came to help you." So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai started crying. He said, "My grandfather's maid, Avram's maid, Hagar, she got an angel to talk to her when she needed it, and I got a demon." So the demon says, "What do you care? I came to help you. Don't worry, when I get there, I'm going to go into the emperor's daughter, and she's going to go crazy, and you're going to tell me what to do, and I'll get out of the emperor's daughter, and then when she'll be cured, you'll get whatever you want. They'll abolish the decree against the Jews." And that's what happened. They came to the emperor, his daughter went mad, and she started yelling, "There's a demon in me," and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came, and he cured the girl, and he told the demon to go out of the pinky, probably, and all the glass in the house shattered when the demon went out, and she yelled, and she was cured, and the emperor loved him, and abolished the decree. There is a source for it. I'm not saying the concept doesn't exist in Talmud, but I said that these people were fakes. So, why did I think they were fakes? Because we have Tosefta and Sota that discusses the modesty that we expect even when we're performing the mitzvah of a Sota. That no men should be around, because if something that's not 100% modest is about to happen, we kick all the men out. So if this man is so holy that he could talk to demons, how could he allow a television crew to videotape a woman lying on a bed? That's not modest. Woman lying on a bed, that's not something that should be publicized all over the world. It's not modest. If he's so holy, I would expect of him at least to have that modesty that you don't show a videotape of a woman lying on a bed to the whole world. So I said, if he's willing to do that, he's not so holy. And then the whole story is a fake. Okay. A few months passed, and again, there are those people who are not talking to me and have declared me an apostate. And then there are those people who are not talking to me about this, but we're still friends. And at that time, I was corresponding with a kid I had met who had questions in Hashkafa. And he'd send his questions in writing, and I'd write him back based on the different sources. And he asked me what I thought about the story, and I wrote him back that I think it's all a farce, and I wouldn't hold any weight in it. And again, as we discussed. So I get a letter from him, which he sends me, I think he sent the original article, that the woman came to the media and said, "Months have passed and they promised me money and they didn't pay up. So I'm going to tell you the truth. It was all a fake." And then she said, "I'll replicate the voice for you, the voice of the demon." And suddenly she can make that funny voice again. And I knew all along there were drugs under that tile. And she told them the whole story. Months later. So now I'm suddenly not an apostate, right? Now I'm suddenly a kosher Jew again. So these friends of mine come back, and we're still friends. Still today we're friends. I don't hold it against them. Fine. And they said what you just asked. They said, "But if the ends are kosher, what do you care if the means were non-kosher?" And I said, "No. The Torah is about doing everything right every step of the way. We're not perfect people, but we have to strive to do what's right. We don't say the ends will justify the means, so trick them and lie to them and play a game, and then they'll believe, they'll keep Shabbos, so good things come of it." No, we don't work that way. The Torah wants us to be just people and honest people and work in a just way, and in a just way advance things. And the Torah gave us enough tools to do things in a just way. And often in life, that's the great temptation. We often have the temptation where we think, "I'll get there easier if I take this shortcut." So there you have organizations that are willing to cheat the government and claim that they have 500 students more than they really do, because then they'll have more money and they'll be able to teach more Torah, and then they'll get those 500 students. That's not right. And then you have people who are willing to forge medical insurance because I'm going to help this guy get his medical bills paid. It's really not his medical insurance. Yeah, but it's okay. Why is it okay? Meaning, you realize that once you're going to let the ends justify the means, then there's very little that you're not going to be able to justify. You can justify many things. And we say no. We say quite the contrary. The Torah told us what means to use, and the Torah told us how to use them. And there are rare exceptions to this rule. It's true. There are exceptions. There is a concept of gdola avera lishma. There are times where we have exceptions to the rule. But obviously you have to learn very, very closely to know when to apply it, because otherwise you could uproot the whole Torah. We do have a concept of et lasot l'Hashem eferu Torah techa. that if the whole Torah is at risk, if all of Judaism is at risk, so sometimes we say the ends will have to justify the means. So Rebbe has to go and write down the oral law, even though that's against a basic Jewish concept. But you realize that that's Rebbe, the giant of the Jewish people, the chief rabbi, the high court, together with his high court. So it's not exactly a regular person deciding that he has to do it. And even there, Rebbe wouldn't do it until he had a source from the Torah to do it. So in general, I think the answer is that no, we do not use improper means just because the end seems justifiable.
This applies also to a boy who doesn't have the Torah to learn by.
So there you're going.